Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is Georgia tight end Brock Bowers.
I'm looking at my notes of the first round tight ends, Kyle Pitts, Eric Ebron. I'm looking at the 17th percentile height. I'm looking at the 12th percentile weight. I don't care, man. This guy's so good. We can talk about the missing athletic profile, but the positional value is going to matter. But to me, this is one of the best tight end prospects I've seen, third best in my model. Kyle Pitts and Brock Bowers, they're not even playing the same type of position here. By far, the best age and team adjusted production since 2005. And I just see a lot of athletic traits out in the flats. I think that's where he's going to be used differently than Kyle Pitts, who is more of a downfield type of guy.
Brock Bowers is awesome. He is so much fun to watch. I mean, he is the elevated version of the archetype that so many people fall in love with, you know, that athletic move tight end who plays with tenacity and somewhat controlled chaos. We'll get into that in a moment. Just some numbers that matter here. 6'3", 243 pounds, 23rd percentile height, 12th percentile weight for the position, 37th percentile wingspan on top of that. And Hayden, his role at Georgia was kind of fascinating over these last 2 years. Let's just take 2022 and 2023. 52 of 156 of his targets were screens, and then another 62 on top of that were out of the slot. A major part of that was obviously in 2022, he played next to Darnell Washington, who was a massive human being and a very different type of tight end that Brock Bowers brings to the table. And if we again look over the last two seasons, 78 of his targets were out of the slot, 47 were in line, and 22 were outside. And so at least on paper, and obviously when you're watching them, this is almost that movable chess piece that is what so many fan bases crave for the tight end position, and there aren't enough talents out there to fulfill that.
He could be used in the seams and out in the flats, and obviously the screens are a part of that. He actually led college football in yards after the catch in all three seasons. He played, immediately broke out at Georgia for the as a freshman, sophomore, and junior, led the position in yards after the catch. Last year, 8.5 yards after the catch. For reference, the NFL leader in yards after the catch was 5.6. That was George Kittle, Jonnu Smith, David Njoku. So we're just talking about somebody that just boogies out there. And you should start seeing some of these corners try to tackle him, and they're just not having a good time. He's bigger than those types out there, so he can break some tackles out there. But he also has some speed to kind of turn the corner. We even saw on a couple end arounds at Georgia getting him out there. So I think that's the difference, is just he's going to be somebody that you can scheme up touches immediately. He's not going to be playing out wide. He can do that on occasion. I think we kind of oversell, like, oh, he's just going to play X receiver on some of the snaps. A couple times they throw some jump fades in those situations, but he's not running routes from there. Instead, out of the slot, he can run option routes, he can run crossing routes, he can just win down the seam, he can win at the catch point. He's got some nice hops on tape and play through contact ability. But to me, the special talent here is just throw the ball out in the flats and watch this guy cook.
Evan Engram does that at the NFL level. You know, a lot of split flow action that they have in Jacksonville. And then here he is working across the line of scrimmage, across the formation, the ball in his hands early, and they allow him to rumble after the catch. I would add that Brock Bowers is probably a bit more physical than Evan Engram brings to the table. And then, as you talked about, so many of, I thought, his man-to-man targets, someone was in his hip pocket, and they threw a bunch of those targets away from his frame, just above his helmet, asked him to adjust, and he did a very good job of that, throwing his back shoulder away. The timing aspect of that, with strong hands at that moment, because even when corners or safeties or linebackers or whoever were trying to fight through his hands to disrupt the catch, oftentimes he was strong enough and, again, close enough to his frame that he was able to win in those environments. Yeah, I mean, slippery after the catch, I would add too. Like, he squirms for extra yards. And what really stood out to me was how, if he does get a free release or after the catch and there's no one out there to tackle because the presentation of the play was so good, he eats up the first 10 yards of ground. Chews it up to the level of a bunch of wide receivers that he is around.
98th percentile yards per game during his career, 64 of them. 98th percentile in his peak amount of touchdowns among drafted prospects. Like I said, it was only Kyle Pitts and Vernon Davis who projected better according to my model here. He's just incredible. And I think that some of the weight issues that he has, I think that his frame means he's going to be able to put on a couple extra pounds. He's 21 years old. I think that he's just looking at like that picture where you're standing next to Gronk.
Yeah,
like,
I don't think he's very broad.
Yeah, but I think that he's going to be able to put some weight on just enough. Yeah. He's more, like you said, Evan Ingram, Dalton Kincaid, Travis Kelce, like that type of mold of tight end. He's not your classic Gronk tight end. But I don't think that you have to be the classic Gronk tight end, especially if he's going to be your number two pass catcher in the offense. Sam LaPorta was somebody that came across in my notes with Brock Bowers, because Sam LaPorta back in 2022, he led college football in missed tackles. Number two in that stat was Brock Bowers. So, yeah, he's going to be a layup to be a top five, top 10 tight end in the NFL. He's not going to do everything in your offense. I think he fights as a blocker. There's at times he can block an edge rusher, definitely can block a linebacker at the second level in the run game. But I think you're drafting him because that yards after the catch ability and then some of the contested catch situations. It's just pretty rare for this position.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, about the inline capabilities, because again, he played next to Darnell Washington in 2022 and then was more of the isolated tight end, I felt, in 2023. I think he's a fine blocker. He is willing. Like you said, he gives effort. There are several times, and people can pull them up, where he drives his man into the ground or to the sideline or shoves them out of the hole. I also felt there were dozens of times where he whiffed on plays too, or his guy made tackles on top of that. But again, that's not going to be the name of his game. He's has to be like a willing and capable blocker to be out there in every single scenario. I mentioned a usage of the early catches that we've seen from Evan Ingram. That's not the comp. The comp is to me Sam LaPorta, and this might freak people out, but like, if he turns into Sam LaPorta, that would be an awesome outcome. LaPorta was a second team all pro during his rookie season and won at all three levels of the field. What I really noticed was Georgia knew the type of player that they had, because most of his man-to-man routes were these vertical downfield catches, which says that he's obviously bigger and faster than anyone that Georgia was going to face up against in the SEC. Sometimes it was corners, sometimes it was safeties, sometimes it was against linebackers. My question to you is, how do you think NFL defenses are going to treat him when they see him out on the field in 12 personnel, as a wide receiver or as a tight end? Because this was kind of the big dilemma that the Buffalo Bills had once drafting Dalton Kincaid. The opposition turned into nickel, and the Buffalo Bills were not capable of being successful or efficient enough in those nickel situations. So then basically the person that was facing off or covering had an extra defensive back on the field.
I think Brock Bowers is more physical than Dalton Kincaid. And I think that's why the Bills have to use two tight end sets and they put him into the slot as a wide receiver. And that's when I think you lose some of the mismatch advantages. I think that Brock Bowers, to me, just 11 personnel. And then you can keep him in line if you need to. And then if you want to go just two wide receivers on each side and call Brock Bowers one of them, I think that's the type of role that I would like love to see him, like on the Bengals, for example. If he kind of falls a little bit, he's kind of in this like 10th overall to 18th overall type of range here, and we'll get to the positional value. But I want him a quarterback that's going to throw the ball to him in the flats. I think that Brock Bowers has shown a good ability to sit in zone coverage as well, which is obviously very important in the NFL. He's going to be labeled as a tight end. I don't think that his receiving traits are so exceptional as a route runner and stuff that you have to treat him as a wide receiver, but he's going to be facing slot corners. He's going to be facing some safeties that rotate down. He's going to face some linebackers. If it's a play action against a linebacker, well, Brock Bowers is going to cook him on a play action route down the field. I think that he has that separation ability. I want him to be treated as the number two pass catcher in an offense, the guy that you're manufacturing touches to, because I do think he's like that type of special athlete with the ball in his hands.
I think I do, for all three downs, have maybe more questions than you do to isolate him as the lone tight end on the field. I mentioned the blocking aspect of that, because in those scenarios, he's going to have to face a defensive end one-on-one. And that even gave him trouble, I thought, at times at the college.
He's average at it.
And then if we're talking about him as a receiver in line, only 18 targets started when he was in line that were 5+ yards down the field. Mm-hmm. So it was, if I was in line or as an H-back, again, it was a lot of screens or underneath stuff. And that was over the last 2 years, I believe. 18 targets over the last 2 years that were 5+ yards. Yeah, I mean, what you talked about, his route running, he's an angry, mean route runner. He stomps the ground and he'll whip his head to try to create these separation off of these breaks. And he does a pretty good job of it. But again, what I was even more impressed by was when a defender was in his hip pocket, jump balls, adjusting for catches, making tough grabs. He was frequently successful at that when a lot of other players, either at tight end, are uncertain of those scenarios, aren't as comfortable in those scenarios. And then obviously comparing him to just pass catchers, which I think is a conversation we should probably have too. Like, how would you compare him to the top three receivers that we have in this class? And then everyone after that, is it fair? Because I think you and I believe, can you really compare Brock Bowers, who's mostly going to be a slot inside player, versus someone like Brian Thomas or Adonai Mitchell, who is going to be a perimeter outside the numbers type wide receiver?
So I'm just going to go look right to the NFL salary caps by position and just kind of look at how high paid each position is. And wide receivers, the top five guys, $25 million per year. Tight ends is at $14 million. I feel very comfortable with Brock Bowers' evaluation, but compared to Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers, and Marvin Harrison, I don't think that they're in the same ballpark just because the contract value that you're talking about. Even Travis Kelce isn't paid anywhere near as high paid as like Tyreek Hill, for example. So I think that's kind of the dilemma with Brock Bowers. And same thing with offensive linemen. They're making $25 million a year. Defensive tackles, $22 million a year. It's basically tight ends and running backs. So this would be like, to me, like if Christian McCaffrey was coming out, whereas a little bit undersized, but we know he's going to be phenomenal based on the production and age and athletic traits. Do you draft him fourth overall? I'm not sure. Do you draft him 12th, 13th overall? I think that's where the conversation gets started here. So I would take the top three wide receivers over Brock Bowers. I am still debating. My number four is Brian Thomas. Brian Thomas versus Brock Bowers would be an interesting conversation.
But they almost fulfill like totally different roles on an NFL offense.
But if I'm looking for a number two, if I have a stud number one wide receiver, I'm looking for to replace T. Higgins, for example. Do I want to go Brian Thomas or do I want to go with Brock Bowers? I think that's kind of the tier. Maybe you have the same conversation with like A.D. Mitchell, your wide receiver four. So I think that's where, when we're talking about the athletic traits, there's been 51 tight ends that have gone round one or two since 2005. Only three of them, Dalton Kincaid, Heath Miller, and Pat Freiermuth, didn't have athletic scores. Neither does Brock Bowers. I don't think that conversation matters all that much, except if you're the Jets and it's Brock Bowers versus an offensive tackle. I think that those little tiebreakers are where we're talking about. So I think I would draft him in the teens. I don't think I would draft him inside the top 10. I think he's going to come into the NFL immediately and produce. I don't think we have to worry about the Kyle Pitts stuff as much. And by the way, Kyle Pitts would be much better without that injury that he picked up, because Kyle Pitts was working down the field, a little bit more volatile, a little bit more reliant on the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it's none of the short screen none stuff that Brock Bowers gets.
I don't care if Brock Bowers' quarterback is going to be. He's going to get numbers just because it's a function of the offense. So I feel a very comfortable, straightforward evaluation for Brock Bowers. I just think that the positional value does matter. And I think he's probably, to me, like the 15th best player in the draft, but also one of the safest prospects in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the athletic testing stuff, because as we discussed last year with Dalton Kincaid, special tight ends are special athletes, and that's more so at tight end versus any other position. RAS is not a perfect composite score out there for athleticism, and I would say that Pro Bowls is not a perfect barometer of NFL talent, but roughly 70% of tight ends since 2001 who have made the Pro Bowl are elite athletes, outstanding athletes, not just good, outstanding athletes. And then to take it one step further, just 17 tight ends since 1991 have recorded a 1,000-yard receiving season. 11 of the 16 are on record with outstanding special athletic profiles. The 17th is Antonio Gates. We can assume one way or the other with that. So with all that said, as Hayden mentioned, we will not get an athletic profile on Brock Bowers. He had tightrope surgery about 5 or 6 months ago. I think also maybe a back injury that kept him out of the combine.
Yeah, hamstrings, a whole bunch of things.
These have been factors. When I said this on Twitter, people got furious and just said, like, go watch the tape. Right. Guys, I get it. All right. If you want to conclude that Brock Bowers is a special athlete based on watching him, you absolutely have the right to do that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. If you want to conclude that Brock Bowers is a special athlete based on topping 20 miles per hour four different occasions during his college career, you absolutely have the right to do that. What I am saying, we have incomplete information here, just as we did again last season as Dalton Kincaid when I brought up the same exact conversation last year. Sam Laporta was a special athlete, and he is already a second team All-Pro. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Brock Bowers is a superior athlete when watching him compared to Dalton Kincaid. I'm simply saying we will not get Brock Bowers' special athleticism confirmed via athletic testing, which again is used to compare prospects across decades. And if you all think that like athletic testing is just the underwear Olympics, like to me, those people have like totally lost the plot. Like you are actively sticking your head in the sand and you're missing like very helpful evaluation tools because you're basically telling me that for hundreds of prospects every single year, you can perfectly separate bad athleticism from average to above average to good to great to special. That means you're the best scout in the world, right?
Yeah.
How often do we hear Daniel Jeremiah, Dane Brugler, Bucky Brooks, Charles Davis, whoever during NFL Combine Week say, oh, wow, I'm shocked by that time. It's a lot slower than I thought. Or, oh, didn't expect him to run that. It happens all the time. If you want to conclude that Brock Bowers is a special athlete, like what we have been talking about, that he plays like great athleticism, like a really athletic tight end in this frame. This is why I compare him to Sam Laporta. You can do that. I'm just simply saying we have not had that confirmed via athletic testing, which has been doing this for decades at the position that it matters most to be a special tight end. You have to be a special athlete.
Were you mad when people said you don't grind the tape? Did that tell you off?
Yeah. I mean, it is just ludicrous to assume that like, hey, you're not watching because you're just stating that athleticism is important for this position and he doesn't have athletic testing.
Let me grind this all the way down. For you, is this because we're talking about a less valuable position and we're trying to break ties? You're not calling Brock Bowers a bust. You're not saying he should be drafted 25th overall.
And it's not if he's athletic or not. It's not if he's athletic or not. It is separating the good to great to special athletes. And again, what I led off with the top, special tight ends are special athletes more so than any other position. People then brought up Marvin Harrison Jr. There have been average wide receiver athletes that have been Hall of Fame wide receivers. I am not applying, because this is correct process, athleticism and athletic testing the same to every single position. Right. It should be different. Again, special tight ends are special athletes. And we just do not know from an athletic testing standpoint if Brock Bowers is a special athlete. That was the statement.
Okay. Let's say you are the Colts. You need another receiver on the outside. You could use a tight end. A.D. Mitchell, Brock Bowers. Is that a conversation to you?
I think that is more of a conversation of what areas does Shane Steichen want to attack on the field. Okay.
So, but you're valuing them about the same. So you don't think it, Brock Bowers, and I don't think so either, should be taken in the top 10, but you kind of right in that next tier where things get a little bit murkier. I think that's where I value him. And it sounds like that's roughly where you
again, the comparison to me is Sam Laporta, who Ben Johnson utilized him in so many intriguing ways, used him as the fly motion player to get up at full speed, to attack deeper portion of the midfield, to attack deeper portions outside the numbers. It wasn't just simple, usual tight end stuff, because he's also a special athlete playing the position, also a really good receiver on top of it. To me, actually comes down to which areas of the field does an offense want to attack, and is it more as an inside player versus an outside player?
Yeah, I think it's all fair. Yeah.
Okay. That does it. Brock Bowers is awesome.
I got a kick out of it when you got quote tweeted to oblivion. That was good content for me.
Only for saying that athletic testing cannot confirm that Brock Bowers is a special athlete. Yeah. Imagine that. This is USC quarterback Caleb Williams.
He's the best prospect I've seen in the last 5 years. I think he's better than Trevor Lawrence. And one stat to just kind of back that up. Among the Power 5 quarterbacks to hit these three benchmarks, 105 total EPA, 80 passing EPA, and 15 rushing EPA, well-rounded skill set. It's Mariota, Mahomes, Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow, Drake May, Caleb Williams. I mean, these are some of the best quarterbacks in the modern NFL. What I see with Caleb Williams, obviously it's all this creative stuff, both as a passer and as a rusher. But I think that his just in-pocket play is gone way, way overlooked. I think he's going to be one of the better passers right in the pocket in the NFL basically immediately.
Just real quick, that list has a lot of carryover from Lincoln Riley and a lot of the same players in that same offense. So just that is on my radar. Mm-hmm. I'm sure this video is going to go for 10 to 15 minutes. We're going to break down every single aspect of Caleb Williams' game. Easy answer. He's special. I mean, Caleb Williams is so special. And it's what you talked about. When I watch him, I really think you're seeing the personification of like the Rodgers effect, the Patrick Mahomes effect, in a way, with a bunch of these younger quarterbacks that are coming through. I'm sure we'll see a couple more in the next few years as well. Just this dynamic that he plays with and the balance that he plays with within the timing of the offense, as you said, within the rhythm of the offense. But then, you know, on any given play, seven things can go wrong. And when something does go into the trash, he has the skills to overcome that failure mm-hmm. because of his athleticism, because of his dynamic arm, because that he can throw from an unbalanced base. And let's dive into almost every single one of those aspects, because he puts so much, I think, magic and uniqueness mm-hmm. on tape that it is just going to be appointment viewing every single Monday of this style of quarterback once he reaches the NFL.
Completely agree. And before we get to the magic, I just want to talk about what happens when things aren't complete chaos,
love
which
it.
They were a lot at USC. By the way, they threw the most screens in the Power Five last year, 137 of them. Those had a 34% success rate, 6 yards per attempt. So if you're wondering why Caleb's stats looked a little bit wonky last year, you can look at the screens that were going nowhere. You can look at his offensive line, which I thought was terrible. And then I don't think that Taj Washington and Brendan Rice are very good as wide receivers. But this is still what's so crazy about Caleb Williams. On the classic timing routes, I'm talking about slants, comebacks, curls, digs, out routes from inside the pocket, he had a 0.54 EPA. That is awesome stuff from him. He had a higher points earned back in that true sophomore season when he went completely nuts and won the Heisman, removing the RPOs, removing the screens, than CJ Stroud did, who I thought was fantastic. Throwing to the best wide receivers inside the pocket, he had a 92nd percentile passing EPA as a true sophomore. Things got a little bit wonkier this last season, but his feel, he can play on rhythm. He's very accurate when his feet are set and he's not trying to make a play out of things. I think that you see him go from 1 to 2. I thought his pocket movement going just from left to right, just a little bit, not talking about scrambling outside the pocket, just finding that one little arm angle, throwing it from a different type of direction here. I thought just beyond the creative stuff, I think that he was a very developed quarterback just from inside the pocket.
Going back to the names that I mentioned, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, when you watch highlights or a compilation video of them, you're going to see these incredible outside of structure plays and downfield throws into tiny little buckets that many other quarterbacks can't make. But then when you actually watch the entire full games, you get the sense, you get the entire picture that, oh, a lot of the throws that they're making are within 2.5, 2.7 seconds because they are diagnosing pre-snap and then they're diagnosing post-snap and the ball mm-hmm. is out of their hands immediately. I am 100% with you that despite maybe the public perception that this is an out of structure style of quarterback who wants to play backyard football, to me, yes, he has that, but that is almost anything but the truth mm-hmm. when he actually has a clean pocket. In fact, his feet almost go silent in those situations. Like they are planted to the ground. Mm-hmm. He's very comfortable to take what is there. And in those moments, he's very rhythmically sound. The timing is absolutely correct and exactly what the coach wants in those situations. So it's mm-hmm. not happy feet. It's not everything getting out of sync and boom, I have to make something outside of structure. And I think, again, going back to Rodgers and Mahomes, it overlooks just how standard of quarterbacking they can be and how important that is mm-hmm. to winning NFL games. And because Caleb Williams has this specialness on his tape too, I almost think that the standard quarterback stuff
yes.
gets overlooked at the exact same time.
Yep. And I think that we'll see that play out when he has actually a better surrounding cast than what he had at USC. He was constantly under pressure. And he kind of gets labeled as this guy that doesn't take care of the football. And obviously there's some really bad fumbles inside the pocket.
There's some really bad stuff.
He carries the ball like Michael Vick a little bit too much, and you can't be doing that inside the pocket. Assuming that gets fixed a little bit, let's talk about his interception rate, 1%.
The sun is out. The birds are chirping. We know what that means. Spring is here. Summer is around the corner, and that means long days outside, at the pool, working out, walking the dog, chasing the kids, which means at the end of the night, you crash, you relax in front of the television. But there's only one problem. You've watched everything you wanted to on whatever streaming platform you use. Here's the solution. Surfshark VPN. It allows you to virtually travel the world from the comfort of your own home with a tap of the finger. You can check out the content you can stream in Spain, in England, in Costa Rica, larger libraries than what is afforded at your current location. Everything you do online stays private when you use a VPN from Surfshark. So get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/underdog. Enter promo code underdog for 3 extra months for free. You heard me right. That is 3 extra months for free. Can't see YouTube video because of your location? Use Surfshark VPN. Can't access that one website to buy limited edition sneakers? Use Surfshark VPN. Again, that is surfshark.deals/underdog. Today's episode is brought to you by Surfshark. You all know my obsession, Aston Villa Football Club, the greatest team in the world. Unfortunately, sometimes, because I live in Brooklyn, sitting in this apartment, I can't see specific content that is made around the club, that is geared towards Europe, that is geared towards Great Britain. Those are geo-restricted. And that, my friends, is where a VPN comes in, and that is where Surfshark comes in. It can seem like I am sitting in a coffee shop in the heart of Birmingham, England, so I can watch the highlights or the commentary of Douglas Luiz curling a shot in the top right corner, or Leon Bailey putting 3 defenders on the grass with his 1, 2, 3 crossover moves. And it extends beyond that. Can't see a YouTube video because of your location? Use Surfshark VPN. Do you want a larger library of Netflix movies to access, like in Canada? Use Surfshark VPN. It's totally risk-free with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And on top of that, if you enter coupon code UNDERDOG for an extra 3 months, they will give you an extra 3 months free so you can secure your privacy with Surfshark. Just go to surfshark.deals/underdog. Go and use it. It's super easy.
You know who that reminds me of? You keep naming him. Aaron Rodgers. The guy throws the ball down the field all the time, plays within the structure and out of structure, never throws an interception. He didn't do that at all. He had 3 of them in the Notre Dame game. Some of them was a missed blitz. There was a safety coming out of nowhere. There were some untimely throws where he's trying to make a play, sure. But 1% interception ratio for how much he was asked to do at USC is absurd. And the other thing we're talking about, he's a true junior. He was a true sophomore when he completely broke out, even as a true freshman when he came in for Spencer Rattler.
There's a lot of good stuff downfield in Oklahoma.
Oh my gosh, some of the throws downfield back in the Oklahoma days. It was so evident. I loved what you said about his base and his feet. He does play super light on his feet at times, and there's other times where he has to be really strong.
Yes.
And this dude will absolutely lower his shoulder for a first down. There's some sacks where an arm sack would knock down a lighter quarterback, but because he is so dense, he is actually able to escape some of these pressures just because he's a strong athlete.
And I actually think that violent movement goes into his pocket movement as well. At times when there's edge presence around him, he will violently stick his back foot in the ground, digs it in there, and climbs the pocket and resets, takes a moment. And it's not a second. It's like 0.1, a tenth of a second, and then delivers like a perfectly balanced pass once again. And again, that just driving movement forward that is just consistent with him. It really is. To talk about his situation, man, you know it much more than I do because you watch the USC Trojans on a weekly basis. Every single prospect that was in the even 2023 NFL draft had their best game against USC. You can talk about Don Kincaid. You can talk about Tajay Spears. And like, I even look back to just one occasion, Washington this season, right?
Okay.
The Huskies had just 2 drives that didn't end in points in the entire game. In fact, 8 of 10 drives ended in a touchdown. I hear a criticism of Caleb Williams that, oh, he just does too much at times.
Right.
That's totally fair. He also had to do too much, right? Mm-hmm. He had to have every single drive end in a touchdown. And because that is very difficult to do with the defense that he has across from him, with the offensive talent and specifically offensive line that was in front of him, it can lead to not even razor thin margins, but just a lot of negative outcomes because he's pushing the limit. He's going to go into a better situation in the NFL. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And they would spread out the offense. So if one offensive lineman made a mistake, there was not a tight end or a running back in there to kind of chip in and give him some extra time there. And I think people, when they talk about this, he plays too dangerously. I think they look at his like time to throw, for example, or his sack rate and stuff. And there's also like an element of the reason why his time to throw is so insane is because he's such a dynamic athlete inside the pocket, and he's not taking off and scrambling immediately. He has this great balance. I think this is maybe his best trait, is when to actually take off for a first down versus when to kind of hold in the pocket, take that hit because he's got that big, strong base.
By that little extra moment, basically, almost drift a little bit. It's not full speed movements. It's drifting. And again, Patrick Mahomes does that better than anyone else in the NFL.
And he can throw it on those left and throw it on his right. Just to put some like numbers behind what he is as like an athlete, 93rd percentile rushing EPA going back to this true sophomore season. That's insane for also being in the 90th percentile as a passer. He on these scrambles and broken plays averaged 0.48 EPA, which is out of this world good. On top of that, there's this one time where there was a fumble where he dropped the snap, and then he had to pick up the ball and then threw a 76-yard passing touchdown. So there were some times where they were throwing ground balls to him out of shotgun. So yeah, for him to turn into Mahomes, now that's obviously the comp that we're trying to dream of with somebody like Caleb Williams. Mahomes has learned to take the easy stuff consistently for games, for months of the season, for the entire regular season until it comes down to the playoffs. Caleb's going to have to learn how to do that. We'll see if he can do that. I think that Caleb is watching enough Mahomes where he's going to try to figure that out. For now, I think he's a bigger version of Kyler Murray, which is a great foundation because Kyler is a borderline top 10 quarterback. And I think that Caleb Williams showed more inside the pocket than what Kyler Murray did, both in the same exact offense. So if he can take a couple more easy completions, which I think goes back to the defense and the surrounding parts where he's trying to make a big play out of something.
Offensive structure with Cliff Kingsbury, not so great this year.
Oh, I mean, you're killing me with this stuff, but so true. If he does that, I think we're looking at a player that can be a Pro Bowler right away. I think that this guy
is a special player, man. He really is a special prospect.
Right. Comparing to Burrow and Lawrence and Stroud and those guys, he just offers that next tier that those guys, as great as prospects as they were, they just don't have access to this type of tier. So in a NFL where you're trying to beat Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, I think Caleb Williams is one of those guys that actually has the traits to go compete with those guys.
You talked about his rushing ability. Again, even going back to those Oklahoma highlights, it's nuts stuff. Against Texas, he broke a tackle at the line of scrimmage on a quarterback power, ran it 60 yards. A couple plays later, he climbed the pocket 55 yards in the air off 1 foot to the front right pylon. That was nuts. What, as a true freshman who wasn't even like the starter. Then over to USC, there was this hilarious snap, and I'm going to try to find the clip for producer Weaves, against UCLA. It was a three-man rush on, I think, 3rd and 3. And every single one of the pass rushers, again, just three, ended up beating their offensive lineman. So he had to overcome 3 one-on-one situations to buy himself little moments and little bits of time. He avoided every single one of them, moved to his left, off-platform throw, first down. So again, it was a three-man rush that you're expecting to, oh, I'm going to have to find a really difficult area and tight window to throw. Instead, he had to turn into 3 avoided sacks and then on the move, elongate the play. To the point, because this kind of brings back to the time to throw stuff, he is an outlier in that regard. Oh, yeah. Here's this chart, career production while under pressure. His average time to throw is above 4.5 seconds. We legit have never seen a quarterback since 2014 in those numbers. And I just going back, and this is just me, I did see him at times turn down some difficult early throws in the hopes of extending plays and that buying time for his lesser talent wide receivers to create space on broken or elongated plays. So to me, that was, oh, I'm going to put the pressure on myself because the play call sucked or these guys couldn't win early because I know I can elongate these plays somewhat safely rather than, hey, this is a 60-40 ball in the favor of the defense, it gives me a better situation if I hold on to this pass for 4.5 seconds and then maybe something happens.
Yep. That's what makes Mahomes just the absolute sensation that he is. And he's basically inevitable because he can do both. He can do the out of structure stuff and he also takes those completions. So we'll see if Caleb Williams is able to do that. I think that's going to be the difference of him being a Pro Bowl type of guy versus somebody that could potentially be an all pro. But a great situation for Caleb Williams to go into, obviously with the two wide receivers that they have, the 9th overall pick as well, with the Chicago Bears, a decent defense. Hopefully they can get the offensive line and play caller. I'm expecting him to go out there immediately and immediately ball out. I think he's that type of guy. And this, the among first overall pick supporting cast, this is not the Carolina Panthers that he's walking into.
He can do the true quarterback traditional stuff. And then he can also, the next snap, be just a team carrier. Mm-hmm. That is like the best description of what it is to be a top 10 to top 5 quarterback in the NFL right now. I will say he does have to get rid of like really loose with the football, carrying it like with one hand and stuff. But you know, the guy's having fun.
You've been doing this for a while now. Where would you put the Caleb Williams pre-draft profile against
just like behind all time
grades?
Just behind Andrew Luck.
Yeah. Seems appropriate.
I don't watch a lot of college football on Saturdays. And so, because I don't want to honestly live in the roller coaster of people's draft emotions and prospect evaluations during the season, because they can fluctuate, it seems like, on Twitter. So just going back to it, I was amazed at how he played the game simple at times when it was able to be given to him, and then just the elongatedness out there. He's not like the biggest dude, you know, he's like just over 6 feet tall and 200 and something pounds. But man, he just has the game that you don't see many people playing in the comfort that he does in uncomfortable situations.
Yep.
Right. Yep. And that is special. You just do not see a prospect like this come around the corner every single draft class.
Don't mess it up, Bears. Not this time. And USC, I'll send you some more NIL money so you guys can, you know, get some better players.
He really is one of those players that you and I are going to wake up and watch every single Monday morning. And that's like the highest compliment that we can give on replay. All right. This is Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy.
He's an acquired taste, but once I really got into the film, I loved what I saw. And I think we have to take our time with this one because it does not come easy. The reminder, though, is we're not scouting based off of the college production. We're scouting about how this is going to translate multiple years into the future at the next level. And I think that J.J. McCarthy, we were underselling his athletic traits, his arm talent, and then some of these clutch situations where he really balled out.
Fascinating. My favorite part of these videos is Hayden has no idea what I'm going to say, and I have no idea what Hayden's going to say. So you all get to be here at the genesis of the conversation. Some numbers that matter. J.J. McCarthy is 6'2 and a half, 219 pounds. Arguable, maybe some water weight in there at the NFL Combine. 91st percentile three cone, 72nd percentile shuttle. And Hayden, he's like on the verge of being 21 years old now. So there is time to grow, and especially muscular, the thickness of what J.J. McCarthy brings to the table. Let's talk about the situation, okay? Michigan, really freaking good, and definitely good the last 2 years. What, he was 27-1, 28-1 over his last two seasons, his only loss being the national championship semifinal. In 1 year, we know that the defense that Harbaugh recruited and put out there in the field, fantastic. The offensive line, just sensational. And so because of that, Hayden, what we get is a really pro style offense, under center, deep play action, attacking areas of the field that NFL offense love. And so I think, like you said, it's really easy to fall in love what you see on the tape because your brain reverts back to what you see on Sundays. And for the best offenses and many of the best quarterbacks, you see almost the exact same things.
Well, I think most people are saying, I didn't see enough of it. That means I'm totally out. He can't do these things. And I think if you're only watching three games, well, there's probably only like 12 or 13 throws in those two, three games where you're like, wow, that is something that we have to really pay attention to. But if you watch the entire course of the season, as I did, you start stacking some of the good with the bad, and there's a whole lot more of the good. So let's get to that. The classic timing routes, slants, comebacks, digs, curls, outs, those type of routes. He had the best EPA in the class on those. Inside the pocket, throwing it on time with good accuracy in the intermediate and short part of the field, he's got it. And then there was also times, because you said they run the ball so often, where it's run. Well, they didn't go anywhere this time. Now it's third and six or beyond that. And he had 10.9 yards per pass on those. best in the class there.
Yep.
And even though he didn't have the raw production like some of these other quarterbacks had, he still actually led the class on middle of the field attempts on digs and crossing routes. That's a total number. He had more of these digs and crossing routes over the middle of the field because he actually plays in an offense that you'll somewhat see in the NFL, in particular with the Shanahan scheme. So while he's not getting the bubble screens and the little RPO passes to inflate some of these numbers, he's not going to be wowing you down the field. A lot of the stuff that we take for granted at the next level, I think J.J. McCarthy does at a really high rate. And I think that what you mentioned, he's going to grow more because he's so young. And I think a lot of his weaknesses are tied to just that he's like physically immature. He does not have the touch because I think he has to really step into throws. And I think as he gets stronger, he's not going to yeah. have those huge windups and like throwing it with his entire body. And I think some of the accuracy issues that we'll see on some parts of the field, I think that can get fixed as well. So I think it's a good starting point for him. It just takes a long time to fully digest what he's actually good at.
A lot to unpack there. And just like in our Drake May video, and hopefully you've watched that, subscribe to the channel, hit that thumbs up button. We talked about comparing a quarterback that has 2 years as a starter at the college level versus guys that have played in legitimately six college football yeah. seasons. And it's not just the physical development that, you know, the Bo Nixes, the Michael Penixes, the Jane Daniels of the world, who, you know, was in four. It's also the mental development on top of it. You see more coverages, you understand blitz packages, you say, oh, this leverage situation I can throw out here, here, here. Obviously, J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, in a much different bucket, but we have to rank them. We have to, you know, stack them up against each other and compare their traits. I do want to touch on a little bit more the situation that he's in. Producer Weaves pulled this up. I think it's from one of our buddies, Pat Corain. Only 53% of J.J. McCarthy's games last year, he had 25 plus dropbacks. Okay. Yep. No other prospect in this class had less than 92%, right? Mm-hmm. He only had one game that had 35 plus dropbacks all of last season. There's a great follow on Twitter, Dynasty Zoltan, who had a great thread about J.J. McCarthy. This is a quarterback in his college career who only had 91 attempts in the fourth quarter. Only wow. 38 of his total attempts in the second half, 14% in the fourth quarter. His halftime deficits as a career starter, two. Average halftime lead, 11 points. Average third quarter lead, 19 points. So Hayden, again, if we're getting this comparison game, all of these different quarterbacks were in very different situations. It's easy to say, maybe not from a wide receiver standpoint, but from an offensive line, defense, just team success standpoint, J.J. McCarthy was in the best situation. So we haven't seen him do, in my opinion, what is the big separator of great quarterbacks in the league. When everything is going to shit, when you need to make the play for us and be perfect for an entire quarter and carry your team out of a hole to the mountaintop, we haven't seen him like put the team on his back yet because he hasn't had to yet. And so I'm not saying he can't. He just really hasn't had to at this time.
It depends on your definition. If it's while trailing in a comeback situation, yeah, he hasn't done that. But if it's just this is a pressure situation, you need to make a big play in a tough environment, well, then third and six plus. Like those are tough environments.
Your point on if you go back and watch the isolated plays after this offense was built on first and second down runs and they got to third and five plus situations,
yeah,
they really should be called like McCarthy time because yeah. he was sensational, maybe right. even the best in this class
yeah.
in those third and five plus situations. And those are, as you were saying, got to have it pure passing mm-hmm. situations that the defense knows that you are throwing the football. And he was exceptional in that environment.
Right. And then if he's not dealing it with like total raw production, his per play numbers are really good. EPA per play, 93rd percentile among drafted quarterbacks. The quarterback rating, 95th percentile. And then like the total rushing is in the 63rd percentile when it comes to rushing EPA. And I think there were some situations where in you have to have it situations, he would actually scramble around, pick up a couple of things at the goal line. You can do a couple quarterback design stuff in short yardage situations. And he's a good athlete while doing that. I think that's probably one of the underrated parts about J.J. McCarthy's game to me is he was a five-star recruit. He went to the IMG Academy, actually played Bishop Sycamore back in the day, that fake high school team. They played them in IMG Academy. But he's a good, loose athlete. And you see this on the run. When he's throwing it on the run, he really could spin it with good accuracy, a tight spiral out there. You can get him on the bootlegs. You see this play action stuff, Shanahan type of scheme. You can already picture how him moving outside the pocket, where I think people want to say he's only Kirk Cousins. I think that J.J. McCarthy and Kirk Cousins are not in the same bucket athletically. I think that J.J. McCarthy, while he's not Drake May and Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels, certainly not that, but he's in a tier above Baker Mayfield and those guys. Kind of like in that Ryan Tannehill type of sphere here, where I think you can get enough of them. You're not going to ask him to do it a ton, but I think there's some situations where you actually can make some plays outside of the pocket.
I am not calling him Ryan Tannehill athletically. Ryan Tannehill was like a college football wide receiver and then obviously switched to quarterback. In fact, I'm with you. If we talk about like his athleticism, again, 91st percentile three cone, 72nd percentile shuttle, those are the only athletic measurements we have with J.J. McCarthy, and those are fantastic stuff. Mm-hmm. I saw it a lot when he was climbing the pocket, and actually his scramble rate, I believe, is almost neck and neck with Caleb Williams, who everyone views at times as just a scrambler, right, which is also totally wrong. There were times when he was asked to retreat and then exit out of the back of the pocket where I thought his athleticism or lack thereof showed up. Like he would get caught. Those pressures would turn to sack more often than I thought. The third and five plus stuff is what I'm always going to go back to. Pure passing situations, he nailed it. Again, it can be difficult to hold this perfect college team against him, but I think it's very easy to believe that whatever team he walks into in the NFL, comparatively from leagues, it's going to be in a much, much worse spot. What happens once he does have to try to carry a game from start to finish? Because we've seen it with literally every single other quarterback in this draft class, and we haven't seen it with him.
Right. I will say, I think that Michigan's receiving corps was very underwhelming compared to like what LSU had and some of like Stroud had and some of these best quarterbacks. You can't even compare them. Roman Wilson's going to be a fine slot wide receiver, but pretty limited at that. You can't even name the outside wide receiver. So I think that J.J. McCarthy is going to be able to play with some better wide receiver talent. We'll see what he can do beyond that. But yeah, the Michigan stuff, like they were winning in all these ball games. Also, when Harbaugh had Andrew Luck, the best quarterback prospect that you've evaluated, they didn't throw the ball very much. When the 49ers were going crazy, they weren't throwing the ball very much. So maybe we can look at this and be like, well, Harbaugh is just this complete outlier coach, and that maybe in a different system we actually see J.J. McCarthy develop. I think that for him to develop, there's a couple things that I want to see him do. There's some mechanical issues, potentially throwing to his left in particular, where he's not throwing the ball as often, can kind of sail some passes. I think some of his accuracy problems, and I think sometimes when he's not throwing with as much touch, I think it's because he was pretty light. I think it goes back to the age thing where he would have to completely step into throws. And I just want him to get stronger over the next couple of years, which I think is like not that crazy of an expectation. Yep. We just saw it from the pre-draft process. He weighed in more at the combine than people were expecting. He needs to be able to do that to avoid more sacks. He needs to avoid some injuries. But I think that some of these accuracy and arm talent issues, there's some throws down the field that just simply were completely out of bounds or just way too flat. And you can't have that. There's some layered throws where he's throwing with the line drive too often. He needs to size up. And then maybe we can get to the more touch, more boundary type of throws. And that's a projection. But I think that we have to either take the old quarterbacks that we've seen it and they're 24 years old, or we have to play this projection game. And historically, the younger quarterbacks are the ones that you can actually project forward. And those guys typically have better results.
I know I'm somewhat taking like the negative tone here. I really like J.J. McCarthy as a player. I think he will be a top five pick in the NFL draft. And I think a lot of it goes back to how NFL coaches, and many of them, it almost blurs the lines of who is making the decision, especially when it comes to the quarterback position as we get closer and closer to the NFL draft. They're going to watch Michigan's offense and see, again, that it's structurally an NFL offense. Like, how many times did Jaden Daniels take a snap from under center, go deep play action, and seven-step drop and rip it over the middle of the field? Never. I mean, Drake May probably did it 2 dozen times. Caleb Williams probably never can go over and over. And the execution on top of that is top notch. And like, we hear it from that entire tree, the Shanahan, maybe lesser so McVay sections, branches of, they just want a guy at quarterback who they can be like the controller of, and they just execute what the offense is on paper. And for JJ, everything is in rhythm. You know, he makes quick decisions and even when abandoning the play, and he'll fit passes into tight windows. And I think from the other quarterback videos that we've done and talking about quarterbacks on Sundays too, we obsess over that middle of the field stuff, and no one's going to be better at it off the rip than what J.J. McCarthy already is. But At the same time, he's probably the worst of the top four outside the numbers, as you said. Just 16% of his passes this past season were to the left side of the field, 19% to the right side of the field. So he, again, doesn't have that many reps of these big time outside the number downfield throws that actually a lot of these other quarterbacks in this draft class do have a lot of experience with.
Yeah, it's very interesting offense because there was a lot of times where it would be a quick out where he's throwing the ball only like to the sideline, but only like 6-7 yards downfield. I think those throws are so hard to make. You have to throw with a lot of trust. And if you're not accurate by just a little bit, those can be pick sixes. And I thought that Heath had to throw a lot more out routes. He had to throw a lot more in-breaking routes, a lot more crossing routes, where your accuracy, because they're running across the field, you only have a little bit of a bucket before it's on the back shoulder and stuff. And I think that some of these accuracy issues are a little bit based off just the type of throws. A back shoulder throw, you have a way bigger of a window to kind of miss versus some of these like timing routes. And I think that JJ McCarthy was asked to do a whole lot of those. And like you said, 35% of his throws were over the middle. That's the best in this class by a wide margin. So I think what I'm willing to do here is I'm more willing to project forward. I think he's going to get bigger. I think that his arm talent is going to speak through. And I think that he's just a better athlete than people give him credit for. That one play against Bama where he caught that ball with one hand, spun and threw it downfield on that flea flicker. I mean, come on. There's just a lot more kind of traits I think people are underestimating. My primary comp, I think Alex Smith is a very good comp for him. Alex Smith, before the leg injury and stuff, was a pretty mobile quarterback. And then I think most people don't like that do content. They're scared to make crazy projections and stuff. But I think like 2, 3, 4 years, I don't see why JJ McCarthy couldn't become some version of Joe Burrow. Obviously, Joe Burrow as a prospect was already doing this repeatedly at LSU, but I don't think there's anything that negative about JJ's game that Burrow hasn't been able to kind of work around in his game.
The offense that Joe Burrow wants to run the NFL is like vastly different than the one that JJ McCarthy is doing now. And so like, again, it's the projection thing because Joe doesn't want to work from under center. He doesn't want to turn his head to the defense. He wants everything to be in shotgun and he wants to carry the passing game from start to finish.
But those 3rd and 6 plays, those weren't play action plays. Those were just regular dropback plays. And I think I saw a lot of reps like that where I can actually see him. It's all on him. And he's actually not just doing the Shanahan Brock Purdy type of thing.
And I want to repeat, I am obsessed with those 3rd and 5 plus situations too. Because again, it was, we have to throw. The defense knows we have to throw. And Michigan knew and relied and trusted JJ to work in those situations. Mm-hmm. And that was a big reason why they were winning those football games. I guess my question from a comp standpoint is he just going to be an EPA lord? You know, is he an EPA lord like Brock Purdy? And you're not a big Brock Purdy fan. And actually, to me, JJ McCarthy and Brock Purdy have quite similar games and similar environments right now if you take college to the NFL.
Sure. I think the big difference between Brock Purdy and JJ McCarthy is I think that Brock Purdy kind of has a little bit of scatterbrain to his game where it sometimes works out and it's better than the Jimmy G thing where it's just one thing at all times. I think JJ McCarthy is a good blend of that where he is athletic enough to buy sometimes like what Brock Purdy does. But I think that he just plays under pressure and more poise than Brock Purdy does. And I think that over time, JJ McCarthy's athletic traits will just completely be in a different conversation than what Brock Purdy does. So this is not an easy thing, an easy video for him, but I think that he's going to be a very good quarterback in the NFL. Obviously, it takes a lot of projections. I don't think most people are afraid of that. And he easily can bust and I can look like a fool here. But I really do think that JJ McCarthy, I was hunting for weaknesses and most of the weaknesses just kept coming down to the inexperience or just his lack of physical development. And to me, if that's all we have to do in the next couple years here, I think I can see a really good football player here.
Yeah. I don't want to blame him for this, but an environment where your team can run 32 straight times basically against Penn State, other than like one incomplete pass that was pass interference jammed in there at some point. Like that is just totally a unique environment versus anyone else that we're talking about here.
What do you think was, and obviously that's the context here, is it makes it very complicated. I hear you on all that type of stuff. What is his real weakness, not environment, when you're watching, you're like, that is just his weakness right there, just by himself.
I don't know what his special skill is.
Okay.
Because I think top 12 quarterbacks season in, season out, and I'm not talking week to week rankings where, you know, team success. I think he can be a very successful quarterback in the NFL, but I don't know if his team is going to be.
Of course not. Yeah.
His team is not going to be an end product of him, if that makes sense, right?
Right. Yeah, I think you're not going to be undefeated.
Yeah, but the special skill part is what separates the quarterbacks from successful quarterbacks, I guess, is my thing. And I am searching for that special skill that takes him into the elites. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between, like, when we were doing our Caleb video, I was like, he can go compete with Josh Allen and Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. J.J. McCarthy's not going to be able to do that. Could he go compete with Trevor Lawrence, Dak Prescott, and that type of tier? I think so.
Okay, here's a question. He might be the quarterback three in this class. He might be drafted as the quarterback three in this class. Mm-hmm. I see far more special skills from Anthony Richardson last year, who was drafted as the quarterback three, versus J.J. McCarthy, who might be drafted as the quarterback three in this
class. Yeah, I would have Anthony Richardson as the quarterback two in this class, and then I'm still debating where I have McCarthy as the three or the two. But we'll have a quarterback rankings video that we can go figure it out.
In a good environment, this will be a really good quarterback because he executes things and is exactly the correct decisions that the coach wants him to do. Like, if it will just be a drastically different rookie season from him if he goes to, let's say, the Minnesota Vikings versus the New England Patriots.
I wouldn't hate if he sat there for the entire season or a half season and let him actually physically develop and learn some other parts of the game. I wouldn't hate that too. I think that he can both be a very good prospect and also might not see the field in week one because he develops, but that's the risk, and we're playing for upside. So the thing I just don't like about the NFL draft stuff is when people are like, I would take him really high up in the draft, but I have a day two grade on him and stuff. Like, we are either in or we are out.
Yeah,
I'm in.
All right, that does it. Absolutely love long conversations like this. And if you want to check out the rest of the quarterback prospects, one, go watch J.J. McCarthy's third and five plus plays, because again, if you are skeptical, that'll turn you around a little bit. You have to dig for them, but definitely do your homework and go watch those. Do your own research. Let's put it that way.
In the description of this video, I put out a little compilation of him making some plays out of structure as a scrambler. Go watch those too.
Yeah, it's 45 seconds.
That's it. I've had enough.
Go to watch the rest of my videos. Hit subscribe. Hit thumbs up. And we will check you all next time.